Are you tired of spending your time and money chasing strategy after strategy, only to discover what worked 10, 5, or even 2 years ago is not working now? Things shift fast in the online space, and if you're not keeping up, you're getting left behind. It's time for something different. Welcome to the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast, where every single episode will be jam-packed with proven, profitable strategies, behind-the-scenes secrets, and what's working now resources from industry experts and global influencers to help you scale your business, shorten your learning curve, and stand out in a crowded, noisy marketplace. And now, your host, award-winning marketing and media strategist and international speaker, Patty Farmer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Marketing, Media, Money Podcast. I'm your host, Patty Farmer, and I'm looking forward to sharing today's industry expert with you. And I'm really excited because today we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, PR. And I think it is a topic that my audience talks about all the time. They're always asking me questions, which really led me to finding someone who I felt was really an expert on this topic. And our guest comes all the way from the UK. So we're going to get a whole bunch of really great information. Make sure you have a pen and paper ready. And also, we're going to get some different perspectives. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest. So she's a former journalist turned PR strategist. Dina Berman works with entrepreneurs to help them stopping the internet's best kept secret, become the go-to expert, and create a much bigger impact in the world by sharing their story and expertise in the press and in best-selling books. She's worked as a publicist for a number of industry leaders and has also helped hundreds of entrepreneurs learn how to do their own PR. She's based in the UK, but works with clients globally. So Dina, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am really excited to really dive into this topic. I think it is really an important topic. And I also feel like, you know, for me, I'm all about how do you master your marketing, leverage the media, and monetize your business. And I think leveraging the power of PR is something where people really don't know enough about, or else they're a little fearful of it, right? They're so afraid they're going to make a mistake. So let's first start with talking about what is PR. And I know, but maybe my audience doesn't, that there are more than one kind of PR, right? Because I'm always talking about the three different ways you can get PR. So why don't we start there? And will you just kind of go with what's your definition about it and the kinds of PR there are?
Yeah. So the way that I focus on PR with my clients is helping them to share their stories and expertise in the press, whether that's traditional print media, newspapers, magazines, digital media, blogs, podcasts, or broadcast TV and radio. So, you know, there's so many different ways that you can get featured. There's so many different types of media outlets out there, but essentially it's sharing your story, your experiences, your journey, and or sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, your opinions, your insights on other people's platforms. And so you can get in front of new audiences by doing this, and you can engage your existing networks by sharing your publicity with them as well.
I think that's important. And I know a lot of times here we talk about earned, you know, paid, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of PR. And I think a lot of times people don't realize that there's a lot of different ways that you can get that and what those differences actually are. So can you speak to that?
Yeah. So typically I focus on helping my clients to get earned media coverage. So you're pitching an idea. So you're sending a media pitch or a press release with an idea for a feature or an interview, and you're sending that out to the journalist or the producer or whoever it is. And it's really a two-way thing in that you provide some really great value for that media outlet, and in return, they're going to publicize your business. So that's there's no monetary payment involved, but there is an exchange in that you will be expected to provide some value, whether that is sharing your expert tips, whether that is sharing your personal experiences, whatever that is. And then in return, that media outlet is going to give you that publicity. So that would be the earned media coverage. And then the paid media coverage is for specific media outlets, which are normally independently run. They will sometimes have opportunities where you can pay to be a part of them, whether it's being interviewed on a podcast or sometimes to appear in a publication. And normally they will have maybe some kind of package or something like that that you're going to pay for. So you get to be featured, and maybe they're going to provide you with some marketing materials as well. And so you get to decide, you know, which types of media you want to pitch and you want to appear in.
It's always nice to kind of mix that up, right, with some of all the different kinds. Okay, yeah. So let's go backwards a little bit first before we dive deep. So tell me a little bit about you. So you were a former journalist and then you turned PR strategist. So I always want to say that we don't wake up one day and just say, you know what, this is what I want to do. This is my passion. This is my purpose. There's always a little bit of a journey, a meandering road a little bit. Could you tell us a little bit about what was like the aha moment that was the thing that happened that kind of changed the trajectory of your journey?
Yeah, so I always loved writing and kind of storytelling, and that led me to be a journalist. And I actually did that for 10 years. And when I was getting towards the sort of 10-year mark of being a journalist, I had had a staff job at a big national newspaper supplement here in the UK. And that had come to an end, and I'd been told they didn't have any more work for me. So I became a full-time freelance journalist. And I was pitching to different publications, and I realized that I needed to diversify, which I think anyone who's been a freelancer before will realize that, you know, it's good to have like different income streams. So I started a side hustle doing PR and copywriting. And I was working with different business owners, and I was offering kind of done for you services. And it was actually when I had my eldest daughter, who's just turned 9, and I'd had a bit of time out of the workplace. And when I came back to work, I just had this kind of, I guess, like a renewed sense of purpose. And it just made me kind of reevaluate things a bit. And I wasn't enjoying the journalism as much. Like I had really enjoyed it, and I'd had some really great experiences, but I'd got to the point where I really wanted to focus on my own business, and I really wanted to go all in on my business. And so that was the point where I kind of transitioned from being a freelancer with a side hustle to actually having my own business and going all in on that. And I realized, because at that point I was a part of some different online communities with other business owners, and I realized there was a need for people that weren't ready to hire a PR agency. They weren't yet at that stage, but they wanted publicity. And so I wanted to be able to provide services for those people. And so I started creating PR courses and programs and offering PR coaching and consulting packages so that I could work with those entrepreneurs that want to learn how to pitch the press themselves.
That's a very good niche to be in there right then, right? You know, because I think that, you know, they're going to be ready to take the step at some point, right? But again, with everything that's going on, it's always kind of nice when you can do some things yourself. And also because sometimes you need something right now, right? Yeah. You know, and it's not in the right cycle. So before we actually go into that, because that's something I really want to talk about, I always like to say it's important to know what not to do as well it is to know what to do, right?
Yeah.
And I think that there's always a lot of, I'm going to call them myths out there, right? These misconceptions of what people think. What would you say is the most common misconception that people have about PR?
I think a lot of people just think that PR isn't going to work for them and that you need to be really well known and have a really large following to be able to be featured in the press. And actually, that's not the case, because really getting good media coverage comes down to having a compelling story to share, and having unique expertise also that you can share so that you can showcase yourself as an expert. So I have worked with industry leaders and got them featured in the press, but equally I've worked with people who are newer in business. They don't have large followings. They're not super well known. And I've helped them to pitch the press and get featured because they are focusing on creating media pitches with a great news angle and sharing a great story and sharing great expertise and wisdom. And those are the things that are really important.
I think that's really powerful to know that. So let's talk a little bit about story. I know that you like to talk about why sharing your story and expertise in the press on other people's platforms is one of the most powerful ways to attract new clients. But I have to say, as a speaker and a marketer, I find that a lot of times people don't really understand how to share their story and they get caught in a whole bunch of details. You know, I had to change originally the question I asked you in the beginning about what changed the trajectory of your business is because I used to ask people to tell us a little bit about their story. And I have to tell you, one time I had somebody on there, and I'm going to say they were probably in their late 50s. And they said, well, when I was in high school, and she literally wanted to take us like through the whole thing. And I was like, wow, that would have been the whole podcast. So thank goodness I am an experienced podcast host. So I was able to guide that. But I think sometimes people think literally like the old days when Facebook first came out and it's like, oh, what, you know, what do you do today? People wanted to post their food and what they were eating and all that stuff because they took it so literal. Right. So can you give us some tips and kind of share the why sharing your story, but then maybe some things that they should take into consideration about what's the part of their story? You know, how can they do that without, this doesn't mean just like blurt out your like whole story because we don't need the backstory. Like we need context, but we don't necessarily need the backstory always.
Yeah. I love this question. And I can imagine when you're interviewing people and you get people that want to share their entire life story. That's what not to do. Don't tell people your entire life story. Storytelling is powerful because that's what creates that deeper emotional connection with your ideal clients. And so when you're sharing your stories on podcasts or in publications, you get to really connect with the reader, connect with the listener, whoever it is that's in the audience on that deeper level. So when you're sharing your story, a really good place to start is thinking about what people call your origin story, which would be the story of how your business came to be and that journey that you've been on. And I work with so many entrepreneurs that have been through different things like divorce or, you know, redundancy or health issues. And so, you know, we've all been on some kind of journey that has led us to be doing what we're doing now. And so when you think about things like what's your mission, what's your big why do you do what you do, that's really going to help you to get clear on what your story is. And so that's always a really good starting point in terms of sharing your story. And then there are going to be different stories that you might use for different occasions and different opportunities. So I guess just starting to think about what are some of the key moments that you've had and stories that would be of interest to the people that you want to be reaching through your media. Because when you're getting featured in the press, you ideally want to look for those media outlets that are going to get you in front of your ideal clients. And then you can share the stories that are really going to speak to your ideal clients.
I agree. I think storytelling is an art, right? There's an art and a science of storytelling. And I think that it is something that when people are looking at their business, it should be something that they really spend a little bit more time with, right? You know, instead of worrying about how do you sound on Facebook and stuff like that, right? You know, I think that it is something that should be higher up the list of things to do. And also, I think, you know, since we're talking about entrepreneurs, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, so for people who are listening, a lot of us either come from, still do network, right? Now, I know that the way I networked, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, and the way that I intentionally build my network now is not the same, right? Is not the same. The show is not about that, but I just want to say one thing about it. I think that sometimes if people have come from networking and they remember sharing their elevator pitch or still doing it, really, I think the shift needs to be more towards sound bites, right? Because I am finding, and actually, I'm going to actually share a little thing about it, is I know that some of the things that I hear people say all the time to me, which I think is hilarious because, I don't know, it just kind of makes me laugh all the time, is when people will say, why is it that journalists that are out there repeat themselves all the time? They're always saying the same thing, and then the record comes back on, and they pretty much say the same thing a different way. And I say, well, because that's an opportunity right there, because all they can do is talk about the information that they have, which is a really great way. And if you have something to say about that, that's what you should be pitching, because that's what they're looking for. They would love it if somebody would give them another thing to say. So I think that that is really important. And as a marketer, I'm really big on newsjacking, right? You know, and really being able to, how can you insert yourself into something that is happening now? And just before we kind of dive into that for a second, I want my audience to kind of understand that. So I'm going to give an example. So for me, I had a client who was literally a financial expert, and she lived in Florida when they had, a few years ago, the really, really big hurricanes. They were, you know, evacuating all the time. And I kept noticing that the journalists and the news people literally were just kept talking about, you know, what an emergency it was and how you needed to be ready for the emergency and you should be prepared for evacuation. And, you know, they were talking about that a lot. And so I called my client up and I said, oh, I think this is really a great opportunity. And she says, for what? I said, for to be talking about emergency. And she says, what do you mean? I said, I'm going to pitch to them about how everybody understands that because of the hurricane, everybody should be prepared to evacuate. But yet, when it comes to their finances, they're not prepared for how they should be prepared for that emergency. And she's like, oh, wow, that was really good how we tied that together. And so I did the pitch. She actually ended up on Capitol Hill. Like, she got so much mileage at that. So I'm always like saying, really, what should you be listening for? And how can you tell things in sound bites? Because that's what they want, right? In sound bites. So that, to me, more importantly than having five ways to say your elevator pitch would be, what are like five different sound bites that you could say that anytime you're asked a question or you're in a position for a quote, that you're prepared. So can you talk about that and like what that would look like? What's really a sound bite? How long should a sound bite be? And like, how they should be looking at what they do, what their story is, so they're able to talk in sound bites rather than these big, big, long stories where they're just going to get cut off and go nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing to remember is that journalists are generally super busy. And so anything that you can do that is going to make the journalist's life easier is going to endear you to them, and they're going to be more likely to want to feature you. So anytime you're communicating with a journalist, it's always having that in the back of your mind, like, how can I help them out? How can I make their life easier? Because then, like I was saying before, it becomes that two-way thing where, because you're helping them out by giving them sound bites and being brief and not rambling on, then you're going to get that publicity in return. So anytime when you're communicating with a journalist, if you're writing a pitch or a press release, or if you're speaking to them, you always want to keep it brief. And so sound bites would be some key messages that you want to share with the journalist that are concise and to the point and convey the message that you want to share, but you're doing it in a way that is just very clear and concise, and not using sort of jargon, not using really long rambling sentences, just making things as simple as possible, because journalists don't always know as much about your subject as you do. And so I remember I had a lady who I worked with who was a nutritionist, and she was being interviewed by a journalist. And afterwards she said to me, well, you know, she was asking me really basic stuff about carbohydrates and proteins, and I can't believe she was asking me such basic questions. And I said, it was only basic to you because you're the expert. Journalists don't necessarily, some of them are experts in particular areas. A lot of them are generalists. And a lot of the time journalists aren't going to know about your subject the way that you do. So if you can keep it clear and simple for them to understand, they are going to be much more likely to want to feature you and to invite you back as well. I have lots of clients where once they've been featured once or interviewed once, they get invited back.
I think that's really important, because I know for me, once I really understood many years ago about creating sound bites and speaking in sound bites, one of the things I really learned is the better you get at it and the more concise you are and the more quotable you are, then you build a relationship with those journalists. And then whenever things are happening in the world, or depending upon what type of journalist it is, they actually know, once they trust you to know that that's what you're going to do, you're going to become their go-to expert whenever they need a quote, right? So I have many of them who will reach out to me and say, Patty, I'm going to be doing this story. Can you give me a quick quote? You know, can you give me this? And then that's why sometimes people say, oh, wow, Patty, I've seen you quoted in this and this and this. Or if they hear that quote more than one time, I mean, that really levels up your expertise and you can kind of become an authority. And so I think really thinking about that, that's way more important than thinking about what your elevator pitches and do I have five different ways to give my elevator pitch, right? You know, so The opportunities from that are so much more, but I think that really getting that clear on what those sound bites are and who, of course, you should be pitching them to and when is really important. So can you give us a few tips for pitching the press and landing the kind of media coverage that will like skyrocket your business, like really elevate and amplify your business? So can you share a few of those?
So yeah, absolutely. The first thing I would say is be really intentional with who you are pitching. So a lot of people think that what they need to do is write a press release and just fire it off to like hundreds of journalists and then hope that it gets picked up. And actually, you're much better off picking a few journalists and pitching them individually and being very bespoke and tailored in your approach, so that you are pitching them something that is a great fit for that specific publication. So the first thing would be make sure you are pitching the media outlets that are going to get you in front of your ideal clients, ideally. And also think about your particular circumstances, your particular business. Like, do you want to raise your profile locally and regionally? Then obviously pitch to local and regional media. You know, do you have a national or international client base? Then you can go for those media outlets that have the audiences that are national or international, whatever it is. You want the audience of the media outlet to match up with who your ideal client demographic is and also what your goals with PR are. So the first thing would be to make sure that you are pitching to the media outlets that are going to be a great fit for you. The second thing would be to offer them something that makes it an easy yes for them. So if you can go and listen to a podcast and listen to some of their episodes and see the types of conversations that that podcast host is having, then go and pitch them something along similar lines. So you're making it easy for them to say yes, because you're giving them something, you know, you can come up with the suggested name of the podcast episode, or if you're pitching an article, come up with a suggested headline for the magazine or for the newspaper, and that's going to make it an easy yes for them.
Yes, I agree with you. I think one of the things that I have also liked doing for myself and my clients too, is to look at what they've already done, because sometimes the easiest way is if you see that, you know, this is kind of what they like, right? You know, it's sort of their niche or maybe just what their expertise and specialty is. And so sometimes I like looking at some of the things that they've done and then asking myself, is there a different perspective that I can give on that same topic, right? Yes. You don't always have to think of something new. You know, this way, they already know that's a good topic. They've already written about it. They've already done it. And sometimes you just might have a different slant or a different perspective, which happens to me all the time. I mean, this is a Marketing, Media, Money podcast, and I'm in marketing. I have marketing people on my show all the time.
Yeah.
Right. Because they share something that is a different perspective. And I think it's good for my audience. Right. So I find that that is really a good way to kind of hone your skill a little bit too, and to look and see, have they had more than one person on and how that has worked for them. It's kind of like when somebody's on a podcast, you really should, before you pitch the podcast, go look at some of their and listen to some of their podcasts and kind of see what the format is and what they're looking for. Right. Yeah. And sometimes we can really tell, right? You know, so I think that there are a lot of different ways that we can do that. I think one of the things I also want to talk about and ask you that I think people don't realize is that there's cycles of PR. You know, like depending upon what you're doing, one of the things that I think is interesting is I had a client once ask me, like at the beginning of December, oh, Patty, I would really like to do some pitches around Christmas. Like my product works really great. And I'm like, and she was a relatively new client. And I was like, well, we should have been worrying about that. You know, that should have been a summertime thing to talk about, right?
Because
there are cycles of PR. Yes. And so when you're pitching, it's a dead giveaway that you don't really understand PR if you're pitching and clearly don't understand the cycles. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it would be particularly for print magazines, like monthly magazines that work very far ahead. And so we have events for PRs called Christmas in July, which we have in the UK, which I'm sure happen in the US as well, because they are planning out their Christmas issues from July. So if you want to pitch to a monthly magazine in particular, then you really do need to be thinking 6 months ahead. And so in July, you're thinking about Christmas and looking at what are the topics that they are likely to be writing about in 6 months' time. And there are certain things that are seasonal events that come up every year that you know they're going to be writing about. So obviously they're going to be doing festive stuff at Christmas. In the new year, they're going to be doing new year, new you type content, because they do every year. And you know that there's things like Valentine's Day or Easter or whatever it is, where you can link in the articles, the content, the interviews to that seasonal event. So you definitely want to be thinking ahead for any kind of print magazines. With other types of media, they will have shorter lead times depending on what that type of media outlet is. So if it's a weekly magazine, they're not going to be working as far in advance. It's always better to pitch sooner rather than later, especially if you have something coming out, whether it's a product or an event or something that's coming up. You're always better off doing it sooner, because then you can always get back in touch with them closer to the date. But it's better to do it sooner, because they may be scheduling, you know, further in advance than one of their competitor magazines. But for a weekly magazine, you know, you'd be thinking sort of 6 to 8 weeks in advance. For things like online news sites, they are constantly updating and looking for kind of what's new. So they'll have some content that they're planning further in advance, and then they'll have things that are based on what's happening in the news as well. So my advice would be, in general, just contact places as early as you can, because then you can get back in touch with them closer to what, you know, the specific event or whatever it is that you've got coming up. But for print in particular, print magazines, they really are going to be working further ahead. And then if it's online, typically that's going to have a shorter lead time.
That makes a lot of sense, but something to be aware of, right? I think people really do need to be aware of that. So let's kind of talk about press releases. You know, a lot of times it's kind of like email. Oh, email's dead. Email's not dead. Bad email's dead. Yeah. Right? Same could be said for press releases. So where do you feel like a lot of times people say, oh, I'm not going to do a press release because that's ridiculous. I'm not paying somebody to do a press release, or I don't think that anybody reads press release. I mean, I heard the whole gambit from one side to the other. So from somebody who is a former journalist and a PR strategist and a publisher, where do you kind of fit, and what is your perspective on press releases?
Yeah, so press releases definitely are still useful and relevant to journalists. And like you say, with the email analogy, like, it's bad press releases that are no good. So a good, well-written press release can get you media coverage. Now, what I would say is, typically I would advise using a press release if you have something specific, like a piece of news that you want to announce to the press. So press releases work really, really well if you have, for example, a book coming out. So that's the type of thing where you can create a press release and tell the journalists all about the book and the launch of the book and let them know all the details. And that works really well. So I would use a press release for something like a book, or if you had a new app coming out, if you had an event you were running, if there was something specific. If you want to pitch, if you have an idea for a feature or an interview and you want to pitch yourself to, you know, be on a radio show, or you want to pitch an idea for a magazine feature or something like that, then I would actually not use a press release. I would create a media pitch, which is where you're essentially pitching your idea. So that is going to be an email. It's typically shorter. That, like, a press release would normally be at least one A4 page, whereas with an email pitch, that's going to be a few paragraphs where you are pitching your idea. This is my idea for a feature, and this is what it would involve, and this is why it's a great idea for you.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think that there's so many things that you can do in so many ways. Getting clear on when to use which one, I think, is really important. Now, I know what my answer is, and I'll be willing to share, but I want to hear you. Do you think that there are certain social media channels or platforms that are better for reaching out to the media? So, like, for me, I have found that pretty much like 90% of the relationships that I have built with journalists happened on Twitter, or at least originated on Twitter. Yeah. Then they kind of went to other places, but they originated on Twitter. I don't really know very many journalists myself that I have built relationships with that I met on Facebook. Even LinkedIn, even though it's a professional network, it's like, I just really have found that for social media, Twitter is really the one to use. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Twitter has always been the place where you can get really up close and personal to journalists, because majority of journalists are on there and they're having conversations on there. So it's a really great way for you to be able to engage with journalists, speak to them directly, and actually get onto their radar. So there are journalists who are on Twitter who will, you know, put out media requests when they're looking for different people to feature. So that's a really good thing to look out for. If there's a journalist that you are thinking about pitching, you can engage with them. You know, maybe they've shared a recent article that they've written. Why not, you know, retweet it and say what you enjoyed about it, something like that. Like, you can build up those relationships. And like you say, you don't really get to do that the way that other social media platforms work. And I think it's quite acceptable as well on Twitter. It's not too invasive because you're having those public conversations with them. I think what journalists might not appreciate so much is if you're trying to get into their inbox. And I think that's when it's much better to actually send an email if you're wanting to pitch them directly. So rather than getting into their DMs, so rather than, like, I wouldn't send them, you know, pitches via Instagram DM or, you know, LinkedIn kind of email and those kinds of things. I think Twitter is the place where you can really engage with journalists, have conversations with them, find out more about them, get onto their radar. And then when you have a pitch that you proactively want to pitch to them, you can connect with them on email and send it that way, but you get to build up that relationship with them on Twitter. LinkedIn could be good for things like just maybe finding out more about a journalist. So maybe finding out, okay, these are the places they've worked in, so I can see they specialize in this topic, that kind of thing. But Twitter really has always been the place where you can really get that up close and personal to journalists and really engage with them.
Yes, I can see that. It's like, really, for me, it's like LinkedIn is really kind of like market research, right? You're really doing a lot of research.
Yeah.
But you're right, on Twitter, not only that, but if you engage and do it properly, right? Like you said, don't get in their DMs. They just start to recognize your name, especially if your Twitter handle is your name. So then when you do the pitch, they're going to be like, oh, wow, that's the girl who, you know, that kind of really retweets my stuff and, you know, supports me and whatever, which definitely gives you a leg up, but do it genuinely and authentically, right? That would be like, so anybody who's writing down, oh, that's what I'm going to do. This is not a, they can smell BS just like everybody else can.
Yeah.
Right. So genuinely and authentically, but I do feel it has been really good. And they do ask. I had a whole media little workshop once and I brought in media people. And I remember there was a girl there who literally her beat was like the places that open around town. And she literally says, you know, she does a lot of research, but she actually told us, if you have someplace that's opening and you're hearing is getting ready to open and you're excited that it's coming to your neighborhood or whatever, like that's the thing she wanted to know. And she said, you don't need to send me an email. Just say that on Twitter. You know, and then you build a relationship. So her and I have built quite a relationship based on that. And so, you know, what are you interested in that that kind of works with your business, right? You know, and I think that that is really a great way that people can do that.
Yeah.
So I have one more question. I have one more question that I think is interesting. Actually, I have two. So yes, I'll save that one for last. So my question is, I noticed that you're also a publisher and that you work with entrepreneurs in like multi-author books, which I think is really interesting because, you know, they kind of ebb and flow, right? You know, for a while you'll see them like everywhere and there's like a million of them coming out. Then you kind of see not so much. And to be honest, some are better than others. In my opinion, per se, for what I purchase and read is when, and I really want to hear your perspective on this, but for me, I just have to tell you, as an entrepreneur, we're busy, right? You know, we're busy. Yeah. I actually do a lot of reading, but I tend to want to read things with like a theme. Like, so I have seen people like write books or put a book together and literally, you know, one person is a Reiki healer and another person is a speaker and another person is a nutritionalist and another, like, I'm probably not going to buy that book just to read like one chapter of somebody who's interested, where if the whole book was about PR and they were different perspectives from all these different PR people, that would be something that I would buy like right now.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like for me, that's just my perspective. But it could be because I'm in marketing. So that's how I spend my dollars. I want everything to have a theme. And my events are that same way too. When I'm choosing to spend money to stay at a hotel, fly somewhere, I also want to know that every speaker is going to be something I'm interested in, not just one or two of them. So how do you feel in the marketplace today, in the environment we're in? What are you seeing that's successful in the multi-author publications?
Yeah. So the books that we do like to have those themes where each expert, you know, will have a different area of expertise, but they're going to be talking about a particular theme. So they're all sharing. And the way that we do the books is that within the chapter, they're all sharing their story. So they are sharing, you know, part of their journey and their story, but they're also sharing some of their expertise. And I think that's really important as well, because I want the books to be something that they can leverage, and we help them to leverage the book and monetize the book. We help them to use the book to get media coverage. So we see, you know, like you say, there are so many different books out there and people are doing them in a lot of different ways. And some of them are people just sharing stories, which is fine, but I really love having the chapters where they get to share their story and their wisdom and have some key takeaways for the readers as well. It helps them to really get that credibility and authority status. It means that the reader's getting something really valuable. And then it helps when they're pitching the press to be able to use some of the same themes from their chapter when they're pitching to the press.
I also find for me, again, I know I'm looking through the lens of marketing, but I also feel like I've been in 5 multi-author books. And one of the things that I found is if there was a similarity to a theme, it made it really easy to support the other people in the book as well. Like, I know since I have a podcast, all the ones that I did, I literally put every one of them on the podcast because they served my audience as well, right? It was of interest to my audience, where if I was in a book where that wasn't so, maybe only 2 or 3 of them would I be able to do that. So I find that that's also, again, from a marketing point of view, for me, that's what I took into consideration too, was from a marketing point of view, if we were all marketing the book, because we're in, am I getting in front of other audiences that are literally my audience as well? Which comes back to what you said in the very beginning. Really, it's always about getting on platforms, whatever they are, right?
Yeah.
Whatever the platform is, that is in front of your ideal client, but in a different way, right? So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'm really glad that you said that, because I think it is really important. Okay, so now the last thing that I want to touch on, it's kind of a touchy topic too, but do you see moving forward where we are now, where do you see, and we don't have to go super deep into this, but where do you see AI in the future of PR? You know, because the reason I'm asking this question is because I publish a magazine. And one of the things that I do is I tell them, like, I want original content.
Yeah.
In the magazine.
Yeah.
And they all sign a contract that basically says that if you write for my magazine, this is original content. And now I have found that I'm going to have to change my contract to say, and not written by a robot. Right. You know, so I think that, you know, there's a place for AI. Like, I use it for certain things, but it is just an assistant, not a ghostwriter. Right. It's just like a team member.
Yeah.
So where do you see that moving forward? Do you think it's going to be something we're going to see more of it, or you think it's going to be something that's going to be more taboo? And the other reason I ask that is because I'm part of the Forbes Council.
Yeah.
And as part of the Forbes Council, they literally came back to us when it came out and said, we do not want you writing articles for us that were AI written. Like, we actually literally had agreed to that. So I'm seeing that we're going to see more of that too.
I think there's going to be a lot more of that, especially with more traditional media. I think that I imagine there's probably a lot of contracts being updated when people are becoming contributors that will say, you know, you can't submit things that have literally just been generated on AI. And I think that, you know, it's something that a lot of people are finding is a really useful tool, and it's all about how you use it. So if you use it for research, and if you use it to find some really great jumping off points for writing your article, then I think that it can be really helpful. It can speed up the research process for you. But if you're literally going to get, you know, ChatGPT to write your article for you, that's not going to be welcomed, I think, by majority of media outlets. So I think it is about knowing that this is something that's becoming more and more prevalent and it's here to stay. And how can we use it, you know, in a positive way? But definitely, you know, just from an SEO point of view, you don't want to have duplicate content. I know that a lot of online blogging platforms and digital publications will say to you, if you're contributing, you mustn't submit something that's like duplicate content because, you know, Google doesn't like it. So I'm sure that they will be saying the same thing about using AI generated content as well. So I think it's about just using AI in a way that's going to be helpful and can assist you and make it quicker and easier, but still creating really good value, high quality content that is your own. At the end of the day, you want to be infusing whatever you're doing with your own personality, your own perspectives. You don't want to be submitting something that has been written by a robot. And it comes back to that thing of, you know, if you can provide something that's really high quality and really great, and then you get to have that publicity for free, that's not going to happen if you're passing off something that's been written by a robot. And you want to keep those relationships going with those journalists so that they come back and ask you for more. So I think it's just about being smart about the way that we use it.
I agree with you. I think that it is a great task reducer, right? You know, it does tasks really well. But I think I agree with you. And I think the name of the game for me is making sure that, especially in PR, that you are using your own voice, right? I always like to say, even if your voice is shaking, use your own voice, right? Because that is what it is really all about. That's what they want. They want your perspective in your voice. Now, I do think AI is a great place to do research. Like I said, it can save you time in some of those things. And there is a place, but that isn't the place. It's not to replace your voice. So I think that is really important. I just wanted to ask that question because I know that people are talking about it right now. And I thought this was really a good place to put it. So I have to tell you, Dina, thank you so much for being here and, you know, offering such great expertise here. How can people connect with you? Because I know they're going to want to.
So the website is dinaberman.com. And they can find all my links on there across social media. It's Dina Berman.
Perfect. And the button will be below. So if you're hearing this right now, just look below. That's where the button will be to be able to connect with that. And she shared with us a lot of resources. We will have them there as long as some of her books as well. And she has a gift, and I think it's a really nice gift as well. So thank you so much. Tell us a little bit about your gift.
Yes, it's a free pitch the press guide. So it has over 70 story ideas that you can use to pitch the press so that you can get that really great media coverage. And it's about what I was talking about earlier of making sure that you are giving the journalist that reason to run your story or your article right now by making it newsy, by having that really great news angle or story angle. So they can download it via the link, and they're going to get over 70 different story ideas that they can use.
I think that's pretty nice. 70, that's 70. So that is really a great gift. So thank you so much for being so generous. So now we're at the part of the show that I like to call social karaoke, where we kind of pass the mic over to our guests and ask them to share, even though you've given us such great information, but what would you say is the number one marketing, media, or money strategy that people should be thinking about using that works for you?
Yeah, so something that's working for me at the moment is sharing a combination of stories and expertise on other people's platforms. So I've been very intentional about doing this recently because it's something that I've done in the past and then I've kind of let it slide. And whenever I do it, I bring in new business, and I have high ticket clients who have found me because they've heard me sharing my stories and expertise on podcasts, or they've read an article of mine in Forbes or Entrepreneur magazine. So sharing the story so that you have that connection part works really well. And then alongside it, you want to be sharing your expertise. So doing those top tips articles or the how-to guides so that you really are positioning yourself as an expert and having that credibility piece there that's really important to build up that know, like, and trust factor, which is going to make it much easier for people to say yes to buying from you. So I've done this in my own business and had clients sign up, and it works for my clients really well as well. And, you know, when it was funny when you mentioned about AI before, when people are sharing their own stories, one of my clients wrote a personal essay sharing her own story. She got 1,500 new leads from that. So when you actually share your own story in the press, when you share your expertise and showcase your expertise, and you leverage other people's platforms and you get that third party endorsement from being seen in a well-known publication that's already known and loved, that is a really, really powerful thing.
That's a great strategy. Thank you so much for sharing it. And thank you so much for being here with us. I appreciate it so much. I mean, you're here from the UK, right? There's a little bit of a time difference, not a lot, but enough of a time difference that I thank you so much for taking the time to be here and sharing your brilliance so generously with my audience.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
So I have a question to the audience. Would you like a simple answer to the question, where should I focus my time and energy to attract highly qualified ideal clients? Then I'm going to invite you to take the Marketing Media Money Assessment, and in 3 minutes or less, you'll know where you're excelling, where you can make a few changes, and what steps you need to take to achieve massive results. So just go to www.m3bizquiz.com. So that's m3bizquiz.com. And so thank you so much for joining us on the Marketing Media Money Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, and I am sure you did, please subscribe and review the podcast on your favorite listening platform. So thank you so much, audience. I appreciate you showing up every single week. I really love it. I love having you a part of the conversation. Until next week, have a phenomenal, profitable, and productive week.
Thank you for joining us today on the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast. To shorten your learning curve even more, make sure to grab your free copy of the Marketing, Media, and Money magazine at www.marketingmediamoney.com. I promise your business will thank you.